face-to-face connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. And it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show. And it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here's an inspirational word from Dr. David Miller before the show begins.
There's somebody out there trying to do something and it seems like it's almost impossible to do. Remember, Nelson Mandela said, it always seems impossible until it's done. Keep trying.
It's a big connection.
We have in the studio with us the owners of Freshwater's Fine Southern and New Orleans Cuisine. These guys have an interesting story about how they were able to develop this Southern and New Orleans cuisine, and the story is so interesting. And I think our listeners will love it today, because what we try to do on the Faith Connection is we try to bring you stories of people who are just ordinary folk doing extraordinary things. So I think we have two of them in front of us today. We have Mr. Clifton Freshwater and his wife Sharon Freshwater. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing great today.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show, and we look forward today to hearing about how you started this fine restaurant and how it's progressing in the city of Charlotte. I want to hear a little bit about your history some. I know you guys went through some struggles before you got to where you are, and we'll talk a little bit about your struggles. And I do know that you were in New Jersey for quite a while, 26 years to be exact, with your restaurant there. So we want to hear about that and just want to kind of get an idea how you guys were able to develop such a successful restaurant in the city of Charlotte. And my understanding is that you both had good careers before you went into the food service business, but just decided that's where you wanted to go. Okay, Clifton, we'll start with you. Tell me a little bit about the struggle that you guys went through in order to get your restaurant moving.
First of all, thanks for having us.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Well, President, what happened was back in 1986, we decided to open up a restaurant in Plainfield, New Jersey. Talked to my wife about it, and she knew I didn't have no prior experience in the cooking field. But I told her I had a dream of opening up a restaurant. And what would you say? She knew I couldn't cook, but she was always my power broker. She was always my best friend. She
now,
was
wait a minute, Cliff. You telling me you can't cook and you want to open a restaurant?
I just had a dream of being an entrepreneur.
Uh-huh.
I had a dream of doing something for myself. And at the present time, I was working for New Jersey Transit.
All right. So you're giving up a lucrative job to start a business, and you can't even cook, right?
Well, one of the things I think I had going for me, I didn't know the unknown. I never worked in a restaurant before. I didn't know the struggles of working in a restaurant. I didn't know how much work was in it. So I guess that worked in my favor.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now tell me, Sharon, how did this strike you? Because you were in corporate America, right? You were with Johnson & Johnson's, right?
Yes, I were in Johnson & Johnson. Once he came home from work, he told me he had quit his job. And I'm like, you quit your job? He said, yes.
What? You quit your job before you got her permission, huh? Oh.
Yeah.
How did that work?
Well, when he came home and told me he had quit his job, I said, you quit your job? What are you talking about? He said, I'm not going back anymore. I gave up. I'm just going into my own business. And I was like, what business? And he said, I'm going to a restaurant. I said, you can't cook. To me, you're going to a restaurant. So I never stopped him, because I didn't want to be the person that say, had the feeling later that if he wanted to, this is his dream and he wanted to do something. And I didn't never want to be, not having him to go in and do his dream and be the fault that he wasn't able to do it. So I ended up saying to him, well, I understand your frustration, because I was frustrated at the time at my job.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I said, well, just give me a few minutes to get all this, take all this
sort of
in.
Digest it, huh?
So I left the house and I went out to the store.
Uh-huh.
I said, let me get this together. So I went to a Hallmark store and I ended up going and buy this plaque that said a man that dares, who dares. Mm-hmm. And it stated everything that he always wanted to do on the plaque. And that I came back with that plaque and I said, well, just live your dream and just remember, once you make it, I'm coming in with you as well.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you're a good wife.
That's what I understand. Yeah, a lot of people say that.
I'm trying to tell you. Now, when you decided that, hey, you're going to let him live out his dream, you were still working with your job, so therefore your income was going to have to keep things going until you could get the business going. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I had to do, I worked at Johnson & Johnson. I did house cleaning. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of evening work, you know, office stuff. I also do like flower arrangements. I did a lot of extra stuff to make ends meet because we had one son. He was in daycare. We had rent to pay.
We had
car payments. And I was the only one that was holding it down for. Mm-hmm. I did it for like 3 years, actually.
Now, what was the address of the first restaurant in New Jersey?
The first address, we was on South Avenue in New Jersey. That was the first address. We opened up. We met this couple who owned a bar. And next to the bar, they had a retail space that wasn't yet rented out. So we seen the space, and we decided to go ask the couple about renting out the space. So we asked the couple about renting out the space, and the lady wanted to know, did we have any kind of experience? And I said to her, I said, no, ma'am, we don't have no experience. We just have experience in corporate. And she said to me, well, Cliff, how are you going to pay me my rent? You don't know how to cook. I said, ma'am, you're right. I don't know how to cook, but please give me a chance. She looked in my eyes and she seen that I was very serious. And she said, Cliff, I'm going to give you a chance, even though I know that you don't know how to cook. And it's 30 years later.
My goodness. Yeah. And you learned how to cook in that 26-year period.
Most of my cooking I learned was on-the-job training. I had cooks who cooked for me, but they always turned their back on me because they didn't want me to learn because they needed me to keep employing them. So a lot of times when they wasn't looking, I was looking.
Now, you're a North Carolinian.
Yes, I was born in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and as a kid, my parents moved to New Jersey, and they left me with my grandparents until they got established in New Jersey, and they came back to get us.
Okay.
So when they came back to get us, we moved to New Jersey. So most of my life, I spent my years in New Jersey, but every year we came back to Elizabeth City to see our family.
That's great. Now, Sharon, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Tampa, Florida.
Tampa, Florida.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, that's quite a connection. Did you guys meet in New Jersey?
Yes, we did. I would come every summer. I have an aunt that lived in New Jersey, and I would come and visit every summer with her after school. Mm-hmm. And I met Cliff the last year of high school. I moved up permanently, and that's when we met in college.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How we met.
Yeah. What college did you guys go?
It was Union County College in Cranford, New Jersey.
Fantastic. Now, let me ask you one other question. Now, I know you had some health issues, but we're going to talk about that after we come back from the break.
Getting on to your first pastor the church, my folks and friends, listen to these words. See, God saved me from myself when no one else was around. And it was only by His grace, His mercy, His favor, because I know I don't deserve all the love He showed. My soul, but I was just a sinner left in the cold. Gave me a second chance, saved me from myself. Came to my rescue when I needed help. You wanna know why I love Him like I do? Cause when my enemy said I was through, He dug me from the bottom and put me on the top. He laid His hands on me, and now I can't be stopped. I love Him like I do. I love Him.
Faith Connection.
It's now time for Faith World News.
I'm Gloria Ross, and this is World Faith News. There was a forum on modern slavery in Istanbul on January 7th. Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew spoke on awareness, action, and impact. After many centuries of progress and advancement, we still live in a world where injustice and slavery continue to thrive, and where human dignity is exchanged for the sole purpose of greed, gain, and profit, reflected Bartholomew. Community is committed to learn, act, and witness to the elimination of this global abomination that traps millions of people to lives of suffering, injustice, and humiliation, he said. The forum, held January 5th through 8th, convened experts, practitioners, and policymakers from international, governmental, and non-governmental organizations in consultation with representatives from Orthodox Christian ministries. It is the third such international gathering. Among the topics discussed were human rights, legal framework, forced migration, human trafficking, and grassroots action. Human trafficking is an issue driven by power and privilege, and we must challenge the current power systems in our societies, said Dr. Perry Nicadius, Dean of Rutgers School of Public Health. This declaration of the rights of the child is denied to so many children on the move because of their migration status, said Dr. Lucero of Harvard School of Public Health. The end of violence requires the end of impunity. The end of impunity requires functioning public systems, said Abraham George, which is the global director of Church Partnership International Justice Mission. Until you are in it, in the human trafficking reality, you have no idea what life you are saving. The only question is, not others, but what can I do about it? Asked Salvelio Kerniski of Canada. Ultimately, silence and passive acceptance of the present situation is no longer possible or acceptable, Bartholomew concluded. Our love is not to be only for those whom we know, but for those that are nameless, those that are unknown, those that are suffering, especially those trapped in the complex web of slavery, he said. We are called to fulfill an act of natural justice, and we must liberate them from tyranny and exploitation. Words are not enough, Bartholomew reiterated. Action is required, he urged. Together with the sensitization of consciousness, we must participate in concrete initiatives and actions. This is Gloria Ross with World Faith News on the Faith Connection Show. And remember today that God will blast a hole in the mountain and make a tunnel for you to go through if necessary. After all, didn't he say that he would make a way where there seemed to be no way? Well, there you go. God bless you today is my prayer.
It's the Faith Connection.
Okay, we're back. Was that far after you got involved in the business or what?
It was normally, I guess, about 10, maybe 10 years after being in the business, I had health issues
right.
that came about.
Are you
about.
Comfortable with discussing that?
Yes, very much so.
Because Cliff mentioned it early on, and he was talking about the unique way in which you all had already bonded, and it helped you through that. And, you know, running a business and then having something like this, most wives would have come back home after going to a place that this thing could soak in and would have said, hey, you go tomorrow and start looking for another job, you know. Yes. But you were at a point where you wanted him to live out his dream, and that says that you guys must be mighty close. And for you to go through a life-threatening situation, a lot of times here on the Faith Connection, I like to connect the tragedies with the successes. Anybody who is successful, they've had to have some tragedies, because the road to success is a rocky road.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your experience. What was the illness that you went through? And
during our career, after 10 years, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
And I just came home and I told him. Well, he was with me actually when I went to the doctors, because I felt a small lump in my right breast. And the doctor said, well, you know, we can do a biopsy. We'll see what it is, this, that, and the third. So what he did, he came back and he said it was a cancer. Mm-hmm. It just started developing. And I had to go through radiation and chemotherapy at the time.
Right.
for that. And I worked still at the restaurant, even though I went through my treatments doing on Mondays. We're closed Mondays, and then we ended up closing on Tuesday for me to get my rest in, you know, because I would do my treatment on Monday, and then I'll be droggy, and then I will go in on Wednesday, to work. And I work from Wednesday to Sunday.
Fantastic.
So my wife was, she definitely was, at that particular time, she was a soldier. She was my right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a devastating blow for me because she was the one I depended on the most. But at that particular time, God had blessed us with a few good people that worked with us to help us through while my wife was disabled. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of times, you know, I had to make my wife stay home because she was so weak. But she wanted to be there, you know, she wanted to be there at the restaurant, you know, to help me out. And a lot, like I said, a lot of times I needed her to stay home, but she was strong-willed and she wanted to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the time when she first got the cancer, and I said to her, I wonder why it was you that got the cancer. She looked at me and looked in my eyes and said, why not me? I'm a child of God. And when she said that, I said, that's strength right there, that's strength. And 2 years, 3 years after that there, God had blessed her to be even stronger than she was. And
absolutely,
that was over 20 years ago right now.
Absolutely.
So she's been my strength.
Now, were you still with Johnson & Johnson when you were diagnosed?
When I was diagnosed? No, I wasn't at Johnson & Johnson at the time.
Full-time
in the business, yes.
Oh, yeah. God, yes. That must have been a real...
Because that was right around 2000, 2001, 2000, because my son was just getting ready to get out of high school.
Yeah, high school.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did a show here on cancer for Cancer Awareness Month, and we did several shows on it. And some of the tragedy to triumph situations and how people overcame was just tear-jerking to hear some of the testimonies. And this testimony, really, when I look at you two guys together and think about all that you must have been through, because anytime you start a new business, it's like a roller coaster. Some months is great, some weeks is great, some months is terrible, and sometimes some years is terrible. So to have to go through that with worrying about, you know, your health situations within itself is a challenge. Yeah, I want to ask you one other question. Now, the restaurant that you now have used to be the old Simmons restaurant, and you guys bought it, redid it, and my understanding turned it into quite a nice restaurant. This is Southern New Orleans cuisine. Tell me about, how did you come up with that?
Well, one of the reasons, maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was always intrigued with New Orleans cooking, always intrigued. And I used to see it on TV, used to read about it in the magazines and stuff. And, you know, and at that time I was selling based Southern cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my wife, I said, you know what? I love New Orleans. And she said, you know what? I'm going to take you to New Orleans on your birthday.
Don't,
I was,
get away from,
shocked.
Me. Really?
She took me to New Orleans on my birthday. We,
man,
stayed,
you got
at
a good wife.
Oh, my God. I got a great wife. Took me to New Orleans, and we stayed there about 3 weeks, and she took me to school. So I went to school there in New Orleans, trained with Paul Padone for 3 weeks. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take this New Orleans thing, and I'm going to fuse it with Southern cooking. Hey, they all is part of the South. New Orleans is a part of the South.
Absolutely. Deep South.
North Carolina's part of the South.
True.
I'm part of the South.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and fuse this stuff together. So most of my stuff is trial and tribulations, learning what I learned in school and burning up stuff and reading about things until I got it right. And today, we have that Southern New Orleans cooking in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Southern New Orleans cooking in Charlotte, North Carolina, that we hope that everybody come to Freshwaters and enjoy it.
You know, I haven't eaten there yet, but I do plan on it, you know. But the thing is if you, the Southern New Orleans, and my wife is from New Orleans, and so she cooks New Orleans foods, and I mean, unbelievable. And her relatives come up to visit for the holidays, and God, man, they cook stuff. I mean, it's like you got to be prepared to gain weight when they come. But the thing is that the restaurant that you have, I'm surprised you didn't open it in Elizabeth City, because, you know, Elizabeth City would have been seafood, right? But you came back to Charlotte. How'd you guys get to Charlotte from New Jersey by way of Elizabeth City? What made you decide to do Charlotte?
Well, back in 2008, my son had graduated from college. And we went to him and we asked him, well, are you planning on coming back home or what you're going to do? So he ended up staying down in Virginia. He went to Virginia.
Hampton,
Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he ended up staying there. So he said he was never coming back to New Jersey. So we thought about doing some downsizing and doing something different. So once we thought about that, we said, well, we still want to do the restaurant business, but we wanted to do something different from New Jersey. So we started going around to Atlanta. We went there. We didn't like that look. So we looked at Virginia. Virginia wasn't a good look. The taxes was crazy there, like Jersey. So I came back and I talked to my girlfriend. I said, you know what? I just went to both places. We just can't find a place. And she said, well, why not come to Charlotte, North Carolina? I'm like, Charlotte, North Carolina? North Carolina? No, I'm not going to North Carolina. I said, Elizabeth City, that's like Elizabeth City. That's the, you know, that's the South. I'm not going there. We're not going that direction. So she says, no, it's nothing like Elizabeth City. You need to come to Charlotte. It's a totally different look. So we came down to Charlotte in 2008, and we stayed here for a week, and I'm like, oh, yes, this is where we need to be. My place of work here, great. And so that's how we ended up in Charlotte. We went back to New Jersey. We started getting everything together. We didn't get here until 3 years after that because we started, selling things off and our properties and all, and then that's how we got to Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been in Charlotte now for 4 years, right?
4 years, yes, sir.
Okay, and from my understanding, the restaurant's taken off very well here.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? We got a guy here who cannot cook that starts a restaurant. Now I hear you are the head chef. Is that right?
Yes, I'm the head chef. I do all the cooking, all the baking. Basically, I'm the guy that does everything to try to make everything work. And my wife does everything in the front of the house to try to make everything work.
Well, you some team, but you know, I tell you the truth, a man that couldn't boil water, you done well.
Yes, sir. I think one of the best things that could have happened to me, that I never worked in a restaurant before, because I would have knew the ups and downs of working in a restaurant. Yeah, that was the unknown.
That's the truth.
Yes. So that helped me out a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because if I knew what I know now, I might think differently.
Well, differently. And you got to remember, his pilot was God. You know, that's the one that he went there every day and prayed. And, you know, and he always would answer your prayers. It may not come when you want it, but it's right on time all
right
the time.
Right on time. I just think that you guys are a model situation for our show, because what we try to do is just find a way to show people who are struggling to find a way that, hey, you can do it, because these people did it as well. You know, I really appreciate you guys being on the show, and thank you so much for your candor, because that's what makes life great, when you're willing to share your struggles and your successes.
Yes.
And certainly you all have come through some struggles and have found a plateau of success, and I think that's great. Let's give our listeners the address of your restaurant. So you're located at 516 North Graham Street in Charlotte, North Carolina. Is there anything that you guys want to say before we close?
Well, one thing I'd like to say, first of all, again, thanks for having us. And to your listening audience, we appreciate y'all. You come to Freshwater's Restaurant, you'll definitely be treated like a king, like a queen, royalties. And we got some of the best food in Charlotte. And we sure like for you to taste our food and enjoy our experience. Thank you.
All right.
And just to add to that, we do have space where you could do catering on-site or off-site. We do off-site catering as well. We have all different events that comes in. We can host any party that you have coming up. And, again, whatever type you would like to do, whatever you would like to do, we'll be able to accommodate you. And, again, we would like to thank you very much for your support, the ones that has been there and then the ones that's on their way there to have Freshwater's. Thank you.
You cater corporate parties, do just open catering. You have full bar available.
Yes.
Okay. Give us your website.
FreshwaterCharlotte.com. That's our actually email. But you could come to the website, sfscotchplains@gmail.com. Okay. And then you can come www.FreshwaterCharlotte.com. Phone number 704-503-9629. That's 704-503-9629, Freshwaters.
Now, tell me a little bit about your Friday night jazz. Is that right?
Yes, we have Friday night jazz from 7:30 to 10. It's a saxophonist that comes in, and he's excellent, Will Lee. He does a lot of local events and stuff in Charlotte, so you need to come out and listen to him from Friday night, every Friday, from 7:30 to 10. Yes.
All right, God bless you guys. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's the Faith Connection Show. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's giving you motivation, inspiration, revelation. It's the Faith Connection. Here we go, here we go, here we go.
Here we go, here we go. Here's the inspirational word from Dr. David Miller before the show begins.
Today is a great day to work on your attitude. You know, all of us have attitudes. Sometimes it comes because we are having certain problems and certain situations in our lives. John Maxwell says to us, and he says it best, he says, people may hear your words, but they feel your attitude. So let's work on our attitudes today. That's the word of the day.
It's a big connection.
Good morning. We're in the studio today with Mr. Michael Norman, who is the owner of IES Electrical. Yes. And also the founder of Global Vocational Training Center. Now, Mr. Norman has a fantastic story. He came through some very dark places in life and brought himself back, grace of God. And now he has started programs that are just phenomenal programs for people who are coming through the reentry program and people who are just trying to get their lives back on track. Now, Mr. Norman, tell us a little bit about your journey. First of all, Mr. Norman is not necessarily the norm because he holds a 4-year college degree in electrical engineering. And so he had a great shot at making it all happen right. But somehow the road got a little rocky. And tell us a little bit about it. I think when you got out of high school, one of the things was you went straight to college out of high school. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Let's start there.
Yes. When I got out of high school, I went to Chewan College in Murfreesboro, North Carolina, to actually study commercial art. I thought I wanted to be a commercial artist and play football with a small football scholarship. But when I got down there and started playing football, I decided that this is something that I don't think I want to do. It was getting too rough for me.
Yeah.
during the commercial art, I was the type of person that can draw when I get in the mode. I couldn't draw on demand in order to make a living. But I found out during the time that when we went into the drafting part and started studying the electrical symbols that I was really, really interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started going deeper onto that electrical field and changed my major, my minor, because it was 2 years, my minor to electrical engineer. So I went from commercial art to electrical engineer while I was at Chewan College. And I did a little drinking also at Chewan College, mm-hmm. college parties. And I knew a place, remember a place called Sandy Bottom, where we used to go and do penny beer every Thursday night. It was penny beer. We'd go there and get beer for a penny.
That's college life. Huh?
Yes, yes. It was a wild scene.
So then after you left college, you got your 2-year degree.
Yes.
And then you went to the Navy.
Yes. I stayed out for about 2 or 3 years after I came out of college doing some soul searching.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to work at a paper mill as a machine operator doing soul searching. Then I decided that I wanted to go into the Navy and continue to get my electrical. I kind of went around the long way because that's what my dad told me to do. He said, look, you go to technical college here because I see that you like electrical. Get 2 years here at AB Tech and then get you a job and let the company pay for the other 2. 2 years, but mm-hmm. I went around a long way.
So you went to the Navy.
I went to the Navy.
And the Navy paid for the other
Yes, the
two
Navy
years.
Paid for it, yes.
Okay. Now, was your father an electrical engineer?
No, he was a machine operator and a janitor, but a very wise man. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anything that he told me that was out of order. He always disciplined us and talked to us based on the principles of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you're originally from what part of North Carolina?
Brevard, North Carolina.
Brevard, North Carolina. And so you've come a long ways from Brevard.
Yes.
But now, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about your business itself. Tell us how you got your own electrical business started. Because I know that when you came out of the Navy, you were fighting an addiction when you came out of the Navy, and that addiction was alcohol. And then it soon mushroomed into crack cocaine. Yes, and that's where you found yourself in such a dark place. But when you got the addiction became back, tell us what happened with the addiction. The reason I want you to talk about all of this is because when we get to what you've accomplished, this story tells all of our listeners that it's important to understand that there is no such thing as that I can't do it.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about the addiction itself.
The addiction was a very dark place. It took me to some places that I thought I'd never go in my life. And I thought that when I had my first child, Whitney, that would straighten me up. I went from alcohol to a higher drug called crack cocaine. And when I had Whitney, I said, okay, this is going to get me off crack cocaine. I remember going into the grocery store debating whether to get Pampers or save that money for the drug.
My goodness.
The drug will always win.
Mm-hmm.
So my first wife, she left me. She couldn't take anymore because I really went into some dark, addicted place, couldn't keep money, couldn't keep a job, didn't want to work. And I remember one night when I was in the house alone, she done left, and she had to. Mm-hmm. I don't blame her today. I see that she had to. And I was on my knees in the dark looking for little rocks in the rug. Mm. I was out of crack cocaine, and my mind was in a turmoil. How I'm going to get more? How I'm going to get more? How I'm going to get more? And I remember this voice speaking to me, like, you know, your inner self speaking to you, said that, you know what, you're not going to always be like this, but tonight the devil's owning you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going on that dark journey, and when I woke up that morning, I woke up and I looked around, I said, wow, where's my family at? I forgot that they left.
Mm.
And I began to walk with no direction, and I began to cry, and I began to have suicidal thoughts, and I ended up over my mom's house, and they called the treatment center, I got on the phone with the treatment center in Brevard, and they told me to come down there, that they'd check
this
me
in. This is a treatment center in Brevard.
In Brevard, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And on my way walking to that treatment center, because there was no one available to take me there, suicidal thoughts was going through my mind. Jump out in front of this car, jump off this bridge, do this, do that. But thank God I did make it down there, and they put me into treatment. And from Brevard, I went to Asheville, North Carolina, to treatment. And from Asheville, they sent me to Black Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to Black Mountain, I was so tired and exhausted that they put me in a room that I slept for 3 days. They took my strings away from my shoestring because they had me on a suicidal watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I slept for 3 days. And when I finally came to, I did feel good. I had some moment of clarity and was able to really hear God. God then said, you know, this is it. So I done everything that they told me to do. I took the cotton out of my mouth, out of my ears, and put it in my mouth, and I began to listen, and I began to say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to whoop this addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can have a life. Black Mountain was good. I felt good about myself, so they put me on the bus and sent me to Charlotte, North Carolina. That's when I arrived and began to stay in the shelter. That's when it was George Shin's shelter then.
Okay.
So I stayed there, but the trip when I got here, I got inside and asked him for a bed. It was so much at capacity that the woman at the desk, she said, we don't have a bed, you got to sleep on the floor.
My goodness.
So I slept on the floor that night, and I woke up that morning. You had about 100 guys in the restroom trying to get ready. I was searching for a towel. I went to the desk. They said, we haven't got any more towels, so I had to dry off with my undershirt. And I remember telling myself the second day, I said, you know what? God, I can't do this. I said, I just came off addiction, and, you know, this is where you put me at. You know, I can't do this because I was in a strange place.
Mm-hmm.
No money. $0.35 in my pocket. Everything I owned was in two hands. Had to carry it around with me, mm-hmm. my shirt, my bag, and all that. And I was going to give up. And I was telling myself, I said, you know what? I'm going to turn Charlotte out. I'm going to be the best drug dealer that they ever seen.
Mm.
And when I was walking out the door, the word for the day was by Martin Luther King. That word that Martin Luther King said, the measure of a man is not how well he does during good times, but how he handles himself during the time of adversity.
My Lord.
I dropped my anchor right there, and I said, God, take control. I'm in your hands. This is what I'm going to do, your will. So that message saved me. It really did, because I was on my way out. And from there, God began to open doors after doors after doors, and I met my good buddy, Mr. Philip Davis. He mm-hmm. baptized me, and once he baptized me, it was on.
Yeah, he was a great minister.
Yes. So I began to work in the youth ministry with him and began to work with IBEW. But before I worked for IBEW, my sponsor told me that I need to get humility. Mm-hmm. He told me to go down to the car wash on Park Road to work and get humility.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Because you made a way.
It's the Faith Connection.
Okay, we're back with Michael Norman.
So I'm an electrical engineer.
4-year degree, and you got to get some humility, huh?
I went to the car wash, and I worked, and I don't know why I was getting the energy, but I was giving people extras, and I was doing this, I was doing that. And when I got back to the halfway house I was in, I had pockets full of money.
Really?
Yeah, the guy said, where you work at? So you see, I said, no matter where I go, my sponsor said, no matter what you do, be your best. Mm-hmm. And I was my best. And when I got comfortable with that, the guy at the car wash said, would you like to be manager? And as soon as I accept that position, then the electrical field started open for me.
Mm-hmm.
I began to work with IBEW as an electrician and began to move up in the ladder. And that's how we got to that point.
My God. Now, you know, you have your own company now.
Yes.
And you come through that extremely dark place. And here you are now owning your own company. Now, your company is called International Electrical Solutions, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, you had the story you told me about that was just phenomenal. You know, how it was that you got your electrical license because you are a licensed electrician. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's really a story that just sort of inspires.
Yes. I was studying with a good friend of mine. He's an engineer at Duke Energy right now. His name is Brother Wang. And we studied together. And the electrical contractor's test is 6 hours long. And when two people go in to take the test, either both of them fail or one of them fail and one of them pass. And we took the test. We studied. And we studied and ate popcorn until 2 o'clock in the morning. Wayne and I, we dug deep and studied it together.
Mm-hmm.
So when we both went to take that test, we broke the record. We both passed that test, electrical contractor's test.
Mm-hmm. My goodness. Now, you both passed the test. After you passed the test, now, how did you get the money to start IES?
I didn't have any money. What my niche was is that how am I going to get work?
Mm-hmm.
I have no car. I have no money. What am I going to do? How am I going to get work? And then I got my license. Going to open up my own company.
Now wait a minute. You had no car.
No car.
No truck.
No truck.
No tools.
No little tools. Very little tools. Very little
okay.
tools.
Okay. And now you're going to start your own business.
I'm going to start my own business.
Okay. Tell me how you marketed yourself and made that happen.
I figured that if I can get my customers to pick me up.
Pick you up?
Pick me up.
Okay. Good luck with that. Go ahead.
Pick me up. If I can't get to them on the bus,
uh-huh.
if I can get them to pick me up, that I can offer them half price mm-hmm. on what another electrical contractor will offer them and do just as good of a job as another electrical contractor. So people begin to pick me up, and I would go in their house and realize that people want you to come in, do a good job, take care of their stuff, do a good job, take care of their stuff, don't act a fool, and go.
Mm-hmm.
And they will pay you. So I would go in their house, take care of their stuff. I would take my shoes off. And again, some of them say, oh, you don't have to do that. I say, no. I make sure I always had clean socks, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't, you know, take care of their yeah. stuff, didn't harass them, you know, act pleasant, act decent, and do a good job, make sure I did extras.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell their friends would tell their friends, and they would tell their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a job, met this young man named Winston Sharp, and I was in his house working one time. And I noticed on the third day there was a Ford Ranger truck. It was like just sitting there, like mm-hmm. it's been sitting there for a long time. And I said, well, Winston, what are you going to do with that Ford Ranger truck? I said, I might can fix it. He said, well, all it needs is a starter. He said, but I tell you what, if you wire this house, do this job, he said, I'll give you that truck.
Mm-hmm.
So we did some horse trading. I wired the house. He gave me the truck, and it was on from there.
Yeah, so now you got a truck.
I got a truck.
And that was the birth of IES Electrical.
Yes.
My goodness. That's quite a story. Now, you know, the reason I invited you on the show, I didn't know all of these pieces at that time, but I wanted to have you on the show because of a program you started.
Yes.
And that program is called Global Vocational Training Center, and you actually take reentry individuals who are coming back into the system after being incarcerated. And I think you were incarcerated one time for a short period of time.
Yes.
A couple of months,
mm-hmm.
and so you really had an idea of what it was to come from a good home, get your education, and then go in the wrong direction.
Right.
You know, because I wondered, I said, why, how did this guy come up with this idea? And I went to your website and heard all the testimonies on the website, and I'm thinking in my head, my God, this is some program. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about why you started that program.
I started that program because I really, during that dark time I was telling you about, I said, if God, if you get me out of this, the only way that I look back is to get my brothers and sisters, because I was in jail with them. I knew how it was to be incarcerated. I knew how it was coming out with a charge on you. And I didn't have a felony charge, thank God. But I knew from talking to these guys, is from looking at their journey, they want to do right. They want to do good. Because when they come out, they're positive. Oh, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to take care of my family. I'm going to take care of my kids. But they run into these doors. Nobody want to hire them with a felony. Baby mama, I thought you was going to get a job. You need milk. We need Pampers. We need to pay the rent. Now you need to step up as a man.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't find a job. And the job that they find is not enough to take care of the family. They haven't got money to do what they need to do to take care of the family.
Right.
So the deal is I can make $500 today. Here come the drug dealer. So that's why I chose the three E's: educate, empower, and employ.
Mm-hmm.
When you come out, we're going to cut all of those obstacles off to give mm-hmm. you room and give you time so that you can rehabilitate yourself. But we're going to educate you, because if I educate you and employ you without empowering you, when you get that money, you're going to have a problem.
Right.
So we're going to empower you.
We're going to take a quick break here. Okay, we're back with Michael Norman.
So,
how does the empowerment piece work?
The empowerment piece work with bringing the financial advisor in and empowering them how to use their money wisely.
Okay, so you bring financial advisors in.
Yes.
Who are these people that you bring?
My financial advisor, Mr. Sal Yang from Edward Jones, he comes in. My banker from Fifth Third, she comes in and talk to him. And I have spiritual counselors come in and talk to him. I'm a minister myself. I give mm-hmm. the minister part as far as the spiritual empowerment mm-hmm. and the mentor. I'm a mentor. I mentor them. I have different men that has a strong spiritual foundation to come in and lecture them, and some of them will mentor them. That's the empowerment
part. So you become a life coach for these guys?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, I know there's a classroom setting, but what really impressed me was after you provide education and self-empowerment, I noticed that you employ some of these people direct with your company. Now, your company, how long has it been in existence now?
Since 2001.
2001. Yes. So we're talking about 16 years now.
Yes.
Okay. And you have four full-time employees.
We have five now. I just put another young guy on named Prince. That young man you see on the front there.
Yeah.
Yes, he came to me. He just came out of jail.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you have five employees. Yes. And how many part?
We have 12 part-time.
12 part-time.
Temps. 12 temps.
Okay, 12, 10. Now, you know, that's a long ways from crack addiction and all those things. You're to be commended for what you've done here. Now, some of these people, I looked at your video, how you actually trained them to actually wirehouse and all the other pieces go. The testimonies are unbelievable. I encourage all of our listeners to go to your website and look at what you're doing with these men and women. And the other thing that we say to them, maybe they can give a donation for your nonprofit as well, because I think you're doing a phenomenal job with these young men. There is another question that I want to ask, but maybe I should ask this one first. You made it. Usually after someone kind of makes it, they don't really want to look back. But why did you decide you were going to start this and try to help these people? I heard what you just said a moment ago, but my question is, that's got to be a tough work.
Yes, it is. It's
okay. And what gives you the motivation to continue with vocational training?
That's my drive in life, is to help others, because I found out that if it's got to be in your heart, can't be in your mind, it's got to be in your heart. If you got it in your heart, and I guess my dad placed this in me, if your goal is to help your fellow man in your heart, God has to equip you to do that, to bring them up out of the miry clay, and to not have any intentions in your mind that I'm here to make rich off of this man. I'm here to make rich. Of course, we got to pay the light bill. We got to pay the rent for the school.
Mm-hmm.
But my drive is to really help my brothers and sisters, especially that revolving door of incarceration. Because the only way that we're going to build up our nation, we have to put our work where our mouth is.
Right.
We've been talking for a long time.
Yeah, it's well said that if you have the vision, God will provide the provision for it.
Yes.
Now, how do you fund this program? You fund it out of your pocket, the school?
Right now, International Electrical Solutions is funding it. Plus, we get donations. We can go to Soil of Spirit Outreach .com website. And go to the nonprofit and donate, and Soil of Spirit Outreach is donated to the school itself.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also asking for mentors to finance books and T-shirts and for a young man or young lady that's coming through.
Okay. It's been really good. I just wish we could go on and talk about more and more of what you're doing. But I'm just impressed with all of the things that you are doing. And I encourage everyone to check out the Global Vocational Training Center, because it's well needed. And certainly you're doing a fantastic job. And as you said, your company, IES, which is International
Electrical Solutions,
right, is funding most of the expense for the school other than donations.
Right.
So actually what you're doing is God has sown into you, and now you're sowing back into other people's lives. And there again, that is extremely commendable. And I thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time out, Michael, because I know you got a whole lot to do. And to take time to come here and be a part of the Faith Connection show really makes me feel good. And I thank God for you and for your work. And we certainly will be praying for you.
Thank you.
Do you have last words you want to give?
Yes. Please come by and see us. We start class January this 5th. It's going to be 6 months. We're at 4921 Albemarle Road, Suite 203. And you can contact me at 704-777-5626. or 704-274-5656.
Okay. And your website?
My website is globalvocationaltrainingcenter.com.
All right.
Come
okay.
by and see me.
Now, how long does the classes last?
6 months. So we're going to start off with an evening class because I got some guys working with me in the daytime. It's going to be from 5 until 9 p.m.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much and appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
It's the Faith Connection Show, and it's here to help you grow.